I sense he doesn't want to hear all the gory details any more than I want to relive them. It's in the past. With a pang of emotion, I wish Holt's troubles were in the rearview mirror, too. I have no idea what's going to happen with his mom, but I can see by the set of his shoulders it's something that weighs on him heavily. We finish our food but linger together, huddled under the warmth of a blanket. Thanks for opening up to me tonight. I want you to know you don't have to hide those things from me. He gives me a grim smile.
You mean the ugly parts?
I shake my head and press a hand to his cheek. There's nothing ugly about you, Holt Rossi. My words are the absolute truth. He's courageous and beautiful, and kind and protective. The depth of my feelings for him scare me. I still don't know where we stand, and I have no idea why, but everything seems like it could be on the verge of crumbling. Only I hope that's not the case. He glances to the street below before meeting my gaze.
Did you ever want something you can't have?
A wave of lust rolls through me. Yes. My voice is just a whisper.
Chapter 21. Holt. I guide Eden to my bedroom as my heart pounds steadily. Part of me can't believe this is happening. I thought I ruined our date earlier with my foul mood, but Eden doesn't look bothered by any of that. She climbs onto the bed and dutifully lifts her arms so I can remove her sweater. Dressed in a black bra and dark jeans, she looks like a sexy temptress. I have no idea how I've ended up lucky enough to get her into bed tonight. As we kiss, Eden unsnaps her bra, momentarily distracting me. She's so damn beautiful. I caress her breasts while her hand drifts south, causing a stir of arousal in my boxers. Between kisses, we take turns removing each other's clothes. Eden isn't the shy, uncertain girl she once was. She wants this. Wants me. That much is obvious by the way she tugs at my belt to free it from my jeans. My body hums with anticipation. After several minutes of removing and tossing stray articles of clothing to the floor, we lie together, bare, kissing and moving as her breathy sighs and soft moans succeed at cranking my libido to an uncomfortable 12 out of 10. She kisses me like this moment is important, like I mean something to her, other than being a guy she can swap a few orgasms with. It's a dangerous thought for me to be thinking, because I know the gulf that separates us. Forcing myself to break the kiss, I move to my side and grab a condom from the nightstand.
Keep a clear head, Rossi. This isn't important or special.
Just like the one we shared in college that wasn't even meaningful enough for Eden to stick around for until morning.
Let me help with that, she murmurs, taking the condom from me and working it down onto my shaft.
I've never had a woman help with this task, but something about her touch makes it all the more erotic. I hover over her and plant gentle kisses on her throat as I line myself up between her parted thighs. She keeps her eyes on mine as I slowly press forward, beginning to ease myself inside. It's an almost spiritual moment. My eyes sink closed as pleasure sizzles through my body. She's so damn warm and wet, and every inch of her is inviting. I keep my pace slow, leisurely at first. I can't ruin this by coming yet, as much as my body is in favor of that idea. The base of my spine tingles and my balls ache, but I have to make this equally as good for Eden. I want to confess so many things to her, but the words catch in my throat. I want to promise to always keep her safe. I want to beg her to stay with me, always. I want her to be mine and no one else's. Of course, I say none of those things out loud because I learned a long time ago that hope is a dangerous thing. Eden will probably get her fill of me and move on once she realizes where we each are in the pecking order. I chase the sad thought away with a steady snapping of my hips,
She whimpers, pressing her pelvis to mine, meeting me stroke for stroke. "Fuck, you feel good," I say, groaning.
"So do you."
She sounds breathless, and I love it. Love knowing that I'm driving her wild with desire, just like she does to me.
"Did you ever think about it?"
she asks, surprising me.
"This?"
I breathe out the word, pressing my mouth to her throat, and she nods. "All the time. Did you?" I'm dying to hear her answer. Did she think about us fucking as often as I did? Eden meets my eyes, and like she's admitting to a long-guarded secret, she nods. Male pride surges through me, and my pulse rate increases. So does my tempo. We've waited so long for this moment, and now that it's here, it's even better than I could have anticipated. I feel, well, pleasure, obviously, but there's also a sense of peace I didn't expect. We're like two halves of a whole, finally together again. No one understands me quite the way Eden seems to.
"Hold,"
she cries, pressing her fingernails into my shoulder.
"There."
It's better than I imagined it would be when she starts to come. And believe me, I imagined it a lot, what our first time together might feel like. It's pleasure-filled and so intense, I don't know how I'll ever recover. My release tears through me, dismantling me from the inside out. A hot rush of pleasure that rips the air from my lungs and makes my body jerk once, twice. Fuck. When I untangle us and peer down at Eden, she's smiling.
"What?"
She tips her chin, playing coy.
But in my head, I pretend that she's thinking, "If I'd known you were so good at that, I wouldn't have waited 6 years."
And hell, maybe it's true. Chapter 22. Holt.
"You didn't have to do all this, you know?"
Eden gives me a shy look from across the center console of my car. "Yes, I did. I ruined what was supposed to be our last date. After I got a panicked phone call from my mom, my mood had plummeted, and I didn't have the energy to cook for Eden like I promised. While we ended up more than salvaging the date, ordering takeout and cuddling, and then, well, things turned physical, and I have zero complaints there. But it wasn't the same as having a nice date, and I didn't want to leave her hanging. Eden is the kind of woman who deserves to be wined and dined. Then why exactly am I taking her on a date to a drive-in movie theater, you ask? Maybe because I know most guys would plan something extravagant to try to impress the wealthy heiress. I also know she couldn't care less about pomp and circumstance. I'm hoping she enjoys this casual downtime together. I reach over and grab her hand, giving her a smile. I didn't have to. But I wanted to. She smiles, settling in beside me as I pull into the drive-in's gravel parking lot for our evening of a double feature. Since she likes 90s music, I guessed that she'd like 90s movies too, and the theater is showing some classics. First, Legally Blonde, followed by Scream. Eden's eyes widen as she takes in our surroundings. It's a weekday night, so there are only a handful of other cars here, all spaced out to give everyone plenty of breathing room. "Have you ever been here before?" She shakes her head.
"No, isn't that crazy? This place has been here for like 40 years.
I nod. "It has. I only came once before. I think you'll like it. I back into a parking space and open the tailgate of my SUV to let the cool evening breeze in. And give us a clear view of the movie screen beyond. "Shall we?" I ask, gesturing to the back. I've laid down the rear seats and padded the cargo area with blankets and pillows. With a giggle, Eden climbs to the back.
"This is awesome,"
she sighs, snuggling into the warm fleece blankets. Thankfully, it's not too chilly tonight, but it's cool enough that we'll have to cuddle up to stay warm. Perfect. I join her in the back and pop open the small cooler I've stowed beneath the seats. "Rosé?" She grins and holds out both hands.
"Yes, please."
I chuckle and pour her a glass in a disposable cup.
Eden accepts the cup and takes a small sip of the chilled wine while I set out the snacks I've packed. Chocolate-covered peanuts, white cheddar popcorn, and bags of miniature pretzels.
There's snacks too?
She asks excitedly. Plenty of snacks. And if we get hungrier than this, there's a hot dog stand over there. I'll go pillage for us. She chuckles.
The perfect man.
The compliment radiates a contented warmth through me. While it's far from true, I decide to bask in that emotion for a moment longer. It's still light outside, but the sun has started to set, casting everything with a pretty pink glow. The screen lights up with movie previews, and I adjust the volume on my car stereo so we can listen. Eden has a dreamy sort of smile on her face as we recline on the makeshift bed of pillows in the back of my SUV.
This has got to be the best date in the history of dates.
She gives me a soft, appreciative look.
Thank you for planning this. It's exactly what I needed to relax.
I nod. She's been under a lot of pressure as a team owner, and while the Titans have had a good start to their season, it's far from over. You deserve a night off. I lean down and press a kiss to her forehead. I'm sure most guys who had the chance to take the Eden Wynn out on a date would have gone much more high-end than $6 movie tickets and a bag full of snacks from the gas station. But I'm really fucking happy she's pleased.
Thanks for this, Holt. It reminds me of something I'd do in high school. A date at the drive-in. Except it's better than high school because I don't have to be nervous about whether you're going to try to get in my pants later.
I chuckle and gaze down at her. Believe me, I'm going to try. She laughs and playfully swats my thigh.
You can try, but just know I'm here for this movie. I haven't seen vintage Reese Witherspoon in years. And pass me some of that popcorn, would you?
I obey, handing her a bag of popcorn and refilling her wine. Our time together is effortless and easy, and isn't something I take for granted. While it's true I haven't dated much, there were a few women in between first hooking up with Eden and now. And none of them made me feel like this. Being with Eden is like coming home after a long day of work. There's comfort and satisfaction, and something you just can't quite put your finger on. I lean in to ask if she wants more popcorn, but Eden shushes me because the movie is starting. I settle in beside her with a growing feeling inside my chest and a smile that refuses to fade. Back at my place, we fall onto the bed together, and Eden wastes no time slipping her hand beneath the fabric of my shirt, placing her warm palm flat on my stomach. A groan pours out of me, an almost desperate sound. I've been hard since halfway through the last movie. I strip out of my shirt while Eden pushes down her jeans. Soon, we're back to kissing. She skims my chest with featherlight touches, treating me as though I'm fragile, something precious to her, and I don't know how to feel about that, but I think I like it a fuck of a lot. The terrain of this new relationship is shifting under my feet, and I'm struggling to catch up. My heart is already there, but my head? It's a mess. The moment I decide to just go with it and stop overthinking our situation is the moment Eden climbs on top of me. I grab a condom, shove off my pants and boxers in record time, and suit up. And then she's sinking down onto me while I groan. Baby, slow. I clench my jaw, gripping one of her hips in my hand.
You like it?
She says softly, her voice barely above a whisper. I groan again. Too much. Eden begins to move. She's incredible, and I alternate between cursing and kissing any patch of bare skin I can reach. Her breasts, each wrist, the pad of her thumb that she presses into the heat of my mouth. It's easy to lose myself in the moment. Our ragged breathing, her throaty noises, the wet sound of where our bodies are joined. Sex has never been this good before. She brings one hand between us to touch herself, and the sight of that is so erotic, so hot. That's it, I say to encourage her, teasing her nipples as she rides me. Faster now. I don't just want to make her feel good. I need it. And I love the idea that she's using my body to get herself off. Potent male satisfaction rips through me when Eden grips me tight and breathes out my name. Her orgasm goes on and on, finally triggering my own release. I bury myself deep, and my cock jerks once as I lean up and press my face into her neck, whispering how perfect she is. She brings her arms around me, holding me close, and for maybe the first time in my life, I know what it feels like to be loved. Eden doesn't have to say the words. Maybe she's afraid. Hell, I am too. I'm terrified about what will happen in the light of day. Can she be with me? Really be with me without upsetting some balance in her personal and professional lives? Does she even want to? I don't have answers to the many questions swirling inside my head. All I know is that this moment is perfect, and I don't want it to end.
Chapter 23. Eden. 3 little emails. That's all that stands between me and my evening off. Today has moved at a snail's pace, but that's probably only because I've been anticipating seeing Holt later. It'll be at a 7-year-old's party, but I'll take what I can get. Lucian's son is celebrating his birthday today, and most of the team is going. I wish I could fast forward to then, when I'll be sipping wine and trying to subtly flirt with Holt in front of the players. But I can't. I can only tackle the work I have in front of me. I sigh, rubbing my temples where I can feel a headache forming. Okay, Eden, you can do this. I click to open the first email, a message from the president of one of our top sponsors. He wants to set up lunch next week. Easy. I forward it to Aspen, asking her to fit it into my calendar. That was painless. The second email, however, is not so simple. My vision blurs as I scan through multiple paragraphs of questions about media policies for next season, then reflexively reach for my phone, opting instead to hide from work in my text thread with Holt. We've been texting on and off all day, which is doing me exactly 0 favors in the focus department. Still, flirting and discussing what presents are fitting for a 7-year-old is way more exciting than media policies. I pick up where we left our discussion on G.I. Joe's, and it's not until I hear the ping of yet another email arriving in my inbox that I realize I've lost focus yet again. Ugh, I've been chronically distracted ever since Holt and I started our... whatever it is that we're doing. It's not a relationship, but with our first official date under our belt, maybe it's not out of line to say that he and I are a thing. However you classify our situationship, one thing is for sure. Holt Rossi is occupying more of my brain than work is lately. It's not such a bad thing considering how much I was eating, sleeping, and breathing all things Boston Titans up until recently. If I didn't step back and let myself be a human being, I probably would have imploded by now. Still, there is a fine line between stepping back and slacking off. I still have a team to run, which sometimes means taking care of boring tasks like answering sponsor emails. My phone buzzes in my hand, and against my better judgment, I welcome the distraction again. It's a text, but not from Holt, unfortunately. It's from my mom, and it sounds slightly panicky. SOS, can you swing by after work? I gnaw on my lip, mentally budgeting my time. 2 minutes ago, I told Holt I'd be at Lucian's party by 6, and Mom's house is easily a 30-minute drive out of the way. But if the situation is as urgent as her text would suggest, I might need to leave the office early. Emails can wait until tomorrow. I'm not sure if I can say the same for whatever is going on with Mom. With my mind made up, I focus on my phone, my thumbs flying across my keyboard. Sure thing, Mom, I'll be there soon. I power down my computer and grab my coat from its hook on the back of my door on my way out. I'm leaving early, I call out to anyone who might be listening, shoving my arms into my coat sleeves. Something just came up. Les, working diligently from his cubicle near the window, arches one bushy gray brow at me.
Is it something with Holt?
My breath stills in my chest, and I hope my flinch isn't as visible as it feels. What? No. I wonder why he'd assume that. Maybe I haven't been as careful as I thought. A small smile forms on Les's lips, causing a ripple of wrinkles to appear across his kind face.
You don't have to be secretive about it, Eden. I know you a little better than that. It's clear there's something going on between you two.
Damn him for being so perceptive. And damn my brain for coming up with zero adequate responses right now. I'm just standing here, slack-jawed, blinking at him like an idiot. Thankfully, we're the only two left in the office. Aspen left an hour ago for a dentist appointment.
Don't worry, Ms. Wynn,
he says with a dismissive wave of his hand.
It's no big deal. Really, it's sweet. And you shouldn't worry about what other people think anyway.
My cheeks go warm as the tension releases from my shoulders. Les's approval is far from the be-all and end-all, but knowing someone in this office isn't repulsed by the idea of me having a thing with the head of security does wonders for my nerves. Thanks, Les, I say, my posture straightening. But really, this isn't about Holt. I just got a weird emergency text from my mom. I'll be in early tomorrow, okay? He pats the top of his desk with one hand and gives me a thumbs up with the other.
No problem. I'll hold down the fort the rest of the afternoon.
I thank him one last time before rushing out the door and straight to the parking garage. 30 minutes of frantic driving later, I'm turning up my mother's private drive, the sculpted hedges blurring as I pass. It's been several months since I've been out to Brookline to visit her, and she's made more than a few changes to the landscaping in that time. Or rather, her gardener has. Each time I visit, there's some new extravagant addition. A topiary shaped like a dolphin, a marble fountain, even a miniature butterfly garden. This time I count 3 new rose bushes planted near the side gate. I step out of my car and rush up the slate walkway, then take the porch steps 2 at a time before pressing a finger against the doorbell. Penny, my mother's Shih Tzu, alerts the house to my arrival. 2 full minutes of high-pitched barking later, there are still no signs of my mother, and I've developed a list of worst-case scenarios long enough to stretch back to my condo. I decide to take a note from Mom's playbook and let myself in from the cold. Hello? Mom? My worried voice echoes through the vaulted ceilings, bouncing off the white marble pillars of the foyer. Sorry, her distant voice calls from upstairs. Be down in a second, honey, just putting some finishing touches on my outfit. Relief floods my system. She didn't fall or hurt herself or anything. The woman is just accessorizing. As promised, she descends the staircase moments later, her sleek gray bob bouncing with every step. Eden, honey, thank goodness you're here. Be honest with me. Am I too old to wear this? She does a slow, deliberate spin, arms out to showcase her beachy outfit, a flowy cream blouse paired with turquoise capri pants. It feels awfully summery for the biting October weather we're currently experiencing. Not too old, but you might be too cold, I say. It's barely 50 degrees outside. Not in the Bahamas. A giddy smile breaks out on her face, the stacks of silver bracelets on her wrists clinking as she claps her hands. I just booked the cutest little bungalow for the next 3 months. The perfect way to get away from the cold for the holidays, don't you think? Sure, I say absently, swallowing the hurt building in my chest. What a way to find out I won't be spending the holidays with my mother this year. When do you leave? Tomorrow. Her expression is one of pure glee. My flight leaves at 7 a.m., which is why I need your expert fashion advice right away. Right, I murmur, pulling my phone from my pocket to check the time. Her text sounded so urgent, but playing spectator to my mother's vacation fashion show is no reason to be late for my goalie's son's birthday party tonight. When I pocket my phone again, I look up to find my mother frowning at me, her arms folded tightly across her chest. You can't put your work emails away for 10 minutes to visit with me before I leave for 3 months? I bite back the words I so desperately want to say. You can't give me more than 12 hours' notice that you're leaving the country for the holidays? Instead, I heave out a sigh, finding my calm. I don't have the time or energy to pick a fight with her right now. I wasn't working, Mom. I was just checking the time. Is there anything besides fashion advice you needed from me? Yes, actually, she says with a huff. I was hoping you'd watch the house and take care of Penny while I'm gone. She gestures to the 10-pound ball of fluff at my feet, and I crouch down, treating Penny to some much-deserved scratches behind her floppy little ears. She makes a happy snuffling sound and licks my palm with her tiny pink tongue. I love this little furball, but she's barely 2 years old and much more of a handful than I have time for right now. I can't be driving back and forth from Boston to Brookline during the height of hockey season. Her frown deepens. I don't live that far from the arena, Eden. It's almost 30 minutes each way with traffic, I remind her, scooping Penny up and pressing to my feet. And half the time I'm traveling with the team to away games. I have a career now, Mom. I can't just drop everything anytime you need me. Oh, so you care more about the Titans than your own mother? Her words are biting and overly dramatic. You know that's not true. You're being ridiculous. My phone buzzes twice in my pocket, and I don't have to look to know it's a notification reminding me of my plans tonight. I have to go, Mom. Much to her disappointment, I place Penny in her arms. I have a work thing. You don't have a game tonight, she says sternly. I'm actually surprised she even knows that. No, it's a social event with the team. She sighs, smoothing the fluffy white hair on Penny's head. You hear that, Pen? She coos to her pup. My own daughter would rather hang out at a kegger with a bunch of Neanderthals than me. It's not a kegger, and they're not Neanderthals, I say evenly, trying to hide the annoyance in my voice. It's the goalie's son's 7th birthday party. As for Penny, there are multiple apps for finding reliable pet sitters. She scoffs in disbelief. What? So I'm just supposed to let some stranger watch my precious girl? I open my mouth to reply, but quickly shut it, pushing back the truth. It's too painful to admit that I'm not much more than a stranger to her anyway these days. She clearly has no knowledge of what my life is like, how all-consuming my career has become. But I'm not having that conversation with her right now. Not while I have places to be and she's about to go AWOL for 3 whole months. I guess I'll have to bring Penny with me, even though she hates to fly, she mutters. I love you, Mom. Travel safe. With a quick hug, I'm back out her door and into the car, feeling even more off-kilter than when I arrived. I can't press the ignition button fast enough, eager to put my mom's house in the rear view. Soon, I'll be among friends. And it's strange to admit, but they're starting to feel more like family than my own family does. 20 minutes later, I pull up behind the line of cars parked outside of Lucian's house in Cambridge. I'm a smidge late, but I'll bet the mini table hockey game I wrapped in bright green wrapping paper will be an adequate apology. I wasn't sure if it was too on the nose to get the son of a goalie a hockey game, but Holt assured me it was the perfect present. Speak of the devil, I've hardly exited my car when I spot him walking my way. He's got on a Titans shirt beneath a black bomber jacket and dark washed jeans he fills out way too well. Just seeing him soothes the tension left over from my visit with my mom. And I wish more than anything I could pull him in and kiss him like I did the last time we were together. Hard and wild and without abandon. But there are too many people we know less than 100 feet away, so when he reaches my side, he leans in for a quick, gentle press of his lips to my cheek, fast enough to go unnoticed by any onlookers.
Glad you made it.
I smile at him, all the unpleasantness of my day fading away. I never thought I'd see the day. Holt Rossi wearing a Titans t-shirt? His lips part and he shakes his head.
Only because the owner is this really cool, really hot chick I know. And I was hoping it would win her over, if you must know.
My laugh falls from my lips without warning. I love this carefree side to him. As we walk, he tips his chin toward the box in my hands.
Let me carry that.
I'm perfectly capable of carrying a 10-pound present, I say, clutching the box to my chest. Plus, I don't want you taking credit for my gift. He cracks a half smile that sends a warm, buzzy feeling reverberating through me.
Fair. Come on, I'll show you where to put it, and where to find the rosé.
I just came from my mother's house, so yeah, wine would be greatly appreciated right now. I follow Holt up the driveway and into Lucian's sprawling backyard, which is decorated for the season with more pumpkins than I've ever seen within the city limits. There are a few familiar faces, mostly players, gathered around picnic tables that must have been brought in for the occasion, and in the distance, the giddy squeals of first graders spill from a giant castle-shaped bounce house. I drop my present on the table with the other brightly colored boxes, trying not to chuckle at the poorly wrapped G.I. Joe-sized box that is almost definitely Holt's.
Let's get you a drink before I turn you loose to the team,
he says, leading me to an outdoor bar on the patio. Despite it being a 7-year-old's birthday party, there's no shortage of adult beverage options. I select a bottle of rosé, pouring myself a generous glass before locating Lucian and his wife, Camille, across the yard. They appear to be in conversation with Tate, the rookie, but when Lucian spots me, he immediately pivots away, his eyes bright with excitement.
You made it,
he says with a grin, pulling me in for a hug that takes me totally off guard. Maybe French Canadians are just more affectionate than we Americans are, or maybe the team really is starting to accept me. I'm hoping it's both. Happy to be here, I smile, then scan the yard for any sign of a newly minted 7-year-old. Where's the birthday boy? Lucian juts a thumb toward the bounce house behind him.
The kids have hardly left that thing. We will have to deflate it to get them out.
Tate snorts.
Dude, for the love of all things safety, please do not trap your son and his friends in a deflated bouncy house.
Speaking of safety,
Price St. James appears out of nowhere, slapping a hand on Holt's back.
You're not here as security, man. You're here as a friend. You don't have to be guarding the boss all night.
Heat creeps up my neck and flushes my cheeks. Hi, Saint. Nice to see you too, but I appreciate the extra layer of safety. It's not a total lie. Being close to Holt makes me feel safe for all sorts of reasons. It's not just that he would never let me get hurt. He would also never be the one to hurt me. Unlike Alex, who has just appeared with a beer in his hands and a frown on his lips. Someone doesn't appear to be in much of a partying mood.
Hey, Eden, did you scope out Holt's rapping job?
Tate nods toward the gifts table, suppressing a smirk.
I thought the Titans hired a security firm, but I think this dude might be a professional DIYer.
Holt grunts, but before he can get a word in, he's interrupted by Saint's cackling laugh.
DIY? What the fuck does that mean, dude?
Do it yourself,
Tate says calmly.
What, you've never been on Pinterest before?
The guys break out into some ridiculous argument about whether Pinterest is only for women, throwing around jokes like they're racking up points and earning plenty of laughs from everyone. Well, everyone but Alex. I haven't seen him smile once since I arrived. Not that it matters much to me. His bad mood is only my problem if it impacts his game. All right, easy enough, Camille finally announces, clapping her hands. It's time for presents. As Lucian and his wife round up the kids, the rest of us take our seats at the picnic tables. There are limited spots, and I certainly don't mind fitting 4 people to a bench, allowing me to cozy up close to Holt by necessity. We are close enough that he can ask me in a quiet grumble,
"Is my present wrapping really that bad?"
I bite my tongue, suppressing a smile as I give his giant thigh a quick squeeze. Sort of. But you make up for your wrapping inadequacies in so many other more pleasurable ways. so I like you anyway. It's a quiet, silly comment, but it's the first time I've admitted it out loud. I have feelings for Holt, and the more I turn the words over in my head, the more I know they're true.
Chapter 24. Holt. You want another one, man? Madden looks over at me with a concerned expression. Looking down at the beer in my hands, I notice it's gone warm. While he's been rambling on about something, I've been sitting here lost in thought. I shake my head. No, I'm good. He chuckles darkly. You're not good. I don't know what you are, but whatever it is, it's the opposite of good. He grabs himself another beer and then takes a spot on the couch across from me. When I invited him over, I was hoping to get out of my head a little bit, enjoy a casual night and a couple of beers with a friend. But so far, the mission is a failure. I can't seem to stop obsessing over this thing with Eden. Our date the other night was transformative. For me, anyway. But I still don't know where we stand, how she really feels about me. When we're together, things are easy, awesome. But when I step back and think about our future, that's where things get murky. We're on two different playing fields, and I'm really struggling with how to rectify that, if it's even possible. You gonna tell me what's going on or what? Madden says, his tone hinting at his annoyance. I give him a long look, trying to figure out what he's wanting me to tell him. About? He rolls his eyes. What the hell you're so hung up on? I guess I've been more obvious than I thought, with all the shit storming through my head. It's nothing. He chuckles darkly. Fine, be an asshole. This pulls a surly laugh out of me. All right, I'll talk, but let's order some food. Madden agrees and pulls out his phone. We decide on Vietnamese and place an order for delivery, and then he's back to looking at me with that same expectant expression. It's Eden. His brows jump. Yeah? I nod. I told you I knew her in college, and yeah, we have a history. He snaps his fingers. I knew it was more than just an acquaintance thing. Bastard. I remember that day in the gym when he pressed me for details. And we've started seeing each other again, I say slowly. Outside of work. He takes another sip of his beer and waits for me to continue.
So, what's the story?
I honestly don't know. Things are casual, I think. I know she's serious about her career. He nods. Isn't her family rich? Like billionaire rich? I shrug and lean back on the couch. I don't know. I assume so. I mean, they own a frickin' NHL team and all. I really don't know the extent of the Wynn's family fortune, nor do I need to. Their money doesn't concern me. They're wealthy, yeah. Why does that matter? Madden meets my gaze. I mentally prepare myself for him to point out how someone like Eden Wynn would never go for a guy like me. And my grip tightens around my beer. Instead, Madden only shrugs.
That's cool, but you're right. I guess it doesn't matter. If you've got a connection, then go for it.
He takes another leisurely swig of his drink while his words bounce around inside my head like a pinball. Like it's so easy. Like Eden and me being together is the simplest thing in the world. Nothing about my life has been easy. So I have zero expectations that it will start now. Still, there's something that lingers deep in my chest. A flicker of hope that can't be extinguished. Mom, I call out as I crack open her unlocked door.
In here,
she calls from somewhere deeper inside the apartment. I balance two bags of groceries in my arms and let myself inside.
It's been a few weeks since I've seen her. And the guilt was starting to wear at me.
I didn't particularly want to come over here today, but the desire to be a good son was eating away at me. And so here I am, son of the year. When I find Mom, she's in the kitchen, coloring in a notebook. Hey, I say, setting the bags of groceries down on the counter. Brought you some bananas, soup. That bread you like, just some basics.
Thanks, baby.
She looks up at me and smiles. Mom looks good. There are no dark circles under her eyes, and she's curled her hair. All good signs that she's taking care of herself. What's that? I ask, confused as I watch her select a yellow-colored pencil from the table.
It's an adult coloring book.
She smiles, and my eyebrows must dart up, because then she laughs.
It was a gift from my addiction counselor.
Oh. I shove my hands in my pockets.
Come on, I'll share.
She pats the seat next to her.
With a sigh, I join her at the kitchen table. From this vantage point, I can see what the image is she's coloring. It's a farm scene, complete with hills and a barn in the background, and a bunch of baby animals in the foreground. She hands me a pencil that's somewhere between gray and brown.
You can do that, wheelbarrow.
She nods to the paper. I obey, scribbling the color onto the page while my mom watches. This is so weird. How have things been going since you got home? I ask. Mom smiles as she colors each daffodil on the hill a bright, sunny yellow.
Just fine. Better than fine. How about you? Still on that job with Eden?
I know better than to believe Mom is past her addiction, but I'll take whatever good news I can get, even if she's just trying to change the subject. I hesitate, unsure of how much to tell her. Yeah. Mom stops coloring to appraise me.
Uh-oh, I know that look. You've gone and fallen for her, haven't you?
I swallow and finish coloring in the wheelbarrow. We've started spending some time together outside of work. Mom makes a sound in her throat, then grabs a pink pencil and gives the piglet some color. Say it, I say sharply. Whatever's on your mind, just say it. She lifts one shoulder and gives me a sympathetic look.
I worry about you, is all. Girls like Eden, they're different, Holt. Different from you and me.
As I process her words, I realize that somewhere deep inside, I used to agree with her. I used to believe the lie that I told myself that Eden and I were just too different, that we could never work. But now I know better. And while there may be some things holding us back, it's not our economics or the number of zeros in her bank account versus mine. That's just it, Mom. Eden doesn't care that I don't have money. She doesn't bat an eyelash at my lumpy mattress or the chip in the mug when I serve her coffee. Mom's silent for a moment, and she pauses in her coloring to look at me. Rising to my feet, I continue. I'm falling for Eden, and I think she feels the same about me. If you can't accept that two people can care about each other without it having to do a damned thing with money, then I won't sit here and be lectured about it.
I'm sorry.
Mom's voice cracks.
All I ever wanted was to keep you from getting hurt like I did all those years ago. I've seen how those kind of people treat people like us.
There's no such thing as those people, Mom. My tone softens. We're all the same. We all have fears and insecurities and things about ourselves that we want to change, and we all want a shot at love. Mom smiles sadly at me.
Then you go take your shot, baby.
Chapter 25. Eden. Would you believe me if I told you this is my first time at this beach? It's a rare, warm day in late October. Just over 70 degrees, according to my weather app, and Holt and I are walking hand in hand down the harbor walk, strolling from the parking lot toward whatever he has planned. He refused to tell me what's on the agenda today, and my only clues are the suspicious canvas tote slung over his shoulder and the fact that we're walking toward the beach.
No way, he says, arching a brow at me.
I look at him and nod. My family used to go to the Cape several times a year, and we took plenty of tropical vacations during the winter. But this beach? I wave my free hand toward the shoreline, dotted with clusters of happy Bostonians enjoying the weather. I've only ever driven past it. I'm not sure if it's the sun or embarrassment that makes my cheeks go warm, but Holt doesn't act surprised. Instead, he keeps asking questions.
The Cape, huh? I've never been out there. How does it compare?
It's gorgeous, I say with a smile, my memory flooding with happy vacation moments from before my parents' divorce, back when family trips to the Cape were as frequent as bank holidays. My mom has always been a sun and sand type. She just said the beaches here in Boston were... I cut myself off, biting down on my lower lip, but Holt nods, fully understanding where I was headed.
I get it. They have a certain reputation,
he says, kicking a discarded cigarette butt in the sand to emphasize his point. Seconds later, we reach the main entrance to the beach, but Holt doesn't halt his stride, leading us past it. When I raise a brow, he just squeezes my hand.
I know where I'm going. Trust me.
The airy, tingling sensation in my chest spreads through my body. I do trust him. Maybe more than I should after just a few weeks of having him back in my life. But everything about him, about us together, sends me positive signals. Even the way he holds my hand, his fingers laced tightly with mine, but with such a gentle touch, like I'm a bird he doesn't want to fly away. Beneath his rough and tumble exterior, Holt Rossi is a gentle giant, and I would follow him just about anywhere. After we've passed the busiest portion of the beach, he steers us off the harbor walk and through a patch of knee-high brush to a small stretch of sand that looks like it's been pulled from a postcard. Here, the crowds of families and college students are nowhere in sight. It's just the two of us, surrounded by white sand and the steady lap of waves against the shore. I'm so enthralled by the view that I hardly notice Holt unpacking the tote bag. When I turn around, I find him sitting on a red flannel blanket, puffed up with pride as he pours wine into two travel glasses. It's a sight that makes my heart turn half a dozen backflips.
Come on.
He pats the blanket next to him.
Let me show you what I brought.
I join him, feeling my smile widen more with each item he pulls from the tote. A box of crackers, a plastic container holding slices of salami and cheese, and a family-sized bag of my favorite honey mustard pretzels, the kind I keep on my desk at work. A simple, romantic picnic containing all my favorite things. Good wine, good snacks, and Holt. When I reach for the bag of pretzels, though, he stops me, reaching back into the tote.
Hold on, I haven't shown you the best part.
He retrieves another plastic container from the bag, tugging off the lid to reveal bite-sized bacon-wrapped goodies.
Don't worry, they're dates,
he tells me with a hint of a smirk.
No shellfish this time.
A deep belly laugh bursts from me. Okay, that's actually hilarious. I say, popping one into my mouth. It's all the maple, bacon-covered goodness a girl could ask for without any of the emergency trips to the hospital. We bask in the salty air, snacking and soaking in each other's company as the sun begins to sink in the sky. Today is nothing extravagant, nothing out of the ordinary, but I've never been so fully aware that this is exactly what I want. Something simple and sweet and easy. Not the fancy restaurants or dimly lit bars with overpriced cocktails other men have tried to use to impress me, as if their black Amex cards could somehow prove their worthiness. Sitting here with Holt on a secret stretch of beach, seeing his attention to all the little details, I'm more impressed than I've ever been with a man before. So, tell me, I say, polishing off what's left of my wine and cozying up to Holt. How'd you become such an expert on the beaches of Boston?
I used to take my little cousins here all the time,
he says, sliding one big arm around my waist. He pauses for a moment, and when he speaks again, his voice is a bit strained.
After my brother got locked up and Mom got into painkillers, I became the go-to babysitter of the family. It was easier to keep them occupied here than in my Aunt Lori's two-bedroom in South Boston.
His words weigh heavy on my chest. There's so much to unpack in his statement. I'm not even sure where to begin, so I trust my instincts and ask the first question that comes to mind. How is your mom doing, by the way? With my head pressed against his chest like this, I can't see his expression, but I can feel his body rise and fall beneath my cheek as he heaves a sigh.
She's doing okay. She enrolled in an outpatient program through her rehab facility to keep her on track, and they seem happy with her progress so far.
That's good to hear, but it still has to be hard for you, I whisper.
It's been tough forever. I'm used to it by now. Not that it ever gets easier, but you learn to adapt. Let the struggle make you stronger.
I uncurl myself from him, shifting back to meet his gaze. Still, it's not fair, and I'm sorry you had to go through that.
We all go through shit.
He grumbles, offering a forced smile that doesn't quite meet his eyes.
I'm more concerned with how it affects you.
My brow crinkles. Of all the responses he could have given, I never would have expected that one. What do you mean by that?
I've had years to get hardened to this shit. But you?
He shakes his head as his gaze slips away from mine.
You don't need any additional baggage.
My heart constricts at his words. He sounds so defeated, like his family life is too much for me to handle. Maybe he's forgotten that I come with my fair share of family drama, too. We all have skeletons in the closet, I tell him, laying one hand on his. You remember who my father is and what he did, right? Holt's gaze flickers back toward me, one dark brow arched.
The governor?
Former governor. I swallow the sour taste in my mouth that always appears when this topic arises. I was just starting middle school when he was removed from office. As if dealing with my parents' divorce wasn't enough, having his affair with his secretary be the talk of every news outlet wasn't exactly fun. It was easy fodder for the bullies at my private school.
Kids can be cruel.
And adults. You know I've dealt with my fair share of grown-up bullies ever since I took on the team. Holt's lips press firmly together as he draws in a deep breath through his nose.
I guess, in our own ways, neither of us have had it easy,
he says with a sigh. Don't get me wrong, your upbringing was way harder than mine. I don't want to demean that. But just because my family has money doesn't make us any less screwed up, believe me. A small smile forms on his lips, his whole body relaxing as he pulls me back into his arms.
I guess we're more similar than I thought.
I nestle my head into his shoulder, breathing in his woodsy scent. Twin flames. We sit like this for a long moment, watching the waves roll in as he strokes my knuckles with the pad of his thumb. When he breaks the silence, it's in a voice so soft yet so sure, it sends a wave of heat rolling through my system.
I don't know how I got lucky enough to find you again, Eden.
Before I can respond, he lifts my face and presses his lips to mine in a warm, tender kiss that makes my whole body light up in response. What he said is true. By some miracle, we found each other in this crazy world a second time. And I can't say for sure, but something tells me we would find each other over and over again, in this lifetime or the next. We stay tangled up together, cuddling and kissing until the sun has sunk low in the sky. As much as I wish we could stop time in this moment, the oncoming darkness has other plans. With the sky burning orange, we pack up our picnic, loading up the blanket and remaining snacks, and make the trek back to Holt's car. When he slides into the driver's seat, he turns toward me, his gray eyes dark with want, and asks the question I've been desperately waiting for.
Do you want to head back to my place?
It's the easiest, most enthusiastic yes I've ever given. The drive back to Holt's apartment is short, but each minute crawls past slower than the last, each second filled with the need to be close to him, to be gathered up in his big arms again. When we finally arrive, I sink into his soft gray couch while I wait for him to put away the snacks we didn't finish.
Can I get you anything?
He calls over his shoulder from the kitchen.
More wine, something to eat.
I shake my head, and moments later, he joins me on the couch, pulling me against his bulky frame, close enough that I can rest my head against his chest. It's far from the first time we've been close like this, but something about him feels different tonight, more at ease. While he toys with my hair, running his thick fingers through my wind-tousled waves, I tune in to his heartbeat. It's a steady rhythm thrumming against my cheek until his hand travels from my hair to my hip, then slowly begins stroking the curve of my ass. Suddenly, his pulse quickens, as does mine. That's nice, I say, grinding my hips against his touch in approval. Before long, his hand wanders to the button of my jeans, and I'm all too eager for him to help me out of them. When he spies the lacy purple thong I have on underneath, his mouth falls slack, his breath an uneven shudder.
Fuck, honey.
His tongue sweeps over his lower lip as he drinks me in, greedy hands reaching for the scrap of lace clinging to my hips. But I have other plans. This man had the courage to share his broken past with me today, and I want to show him just how grateful I am. When I sink to my knees in front of him, a low, tortured sound rumbles deep in his throat.
Jesus, Eden, too good to me.
He shoves off his jeans, and a small bubble of pride forms in my chest when I see he's already half hard for me. A few gentle caresses from base to tip, and he's ready, his stormy eyes pleading with mine. But he doesn't have to plead. I want him just as much as he wants me. When I slide him into my mouth, a shiver rolls from him through me, a shared moment of pure adrenaline as we connect.
Good God, Eden.
He gathers my hair in his fist, holding my blonde waves at the nape of my neck as I take an inch of him, then another, until my lips are wrapped tight around him. He shudders and I glide my lips up to his velvety tip, then down again, working him over with my tongue all the while. Then his breath hitches and he pulls back, his ash-colored eyes flickering with something close to primal.
So good, sweetheart, but I need all of you.
I can't argue with that. Weaving his fingers through mine, he pulls me back onto the couch and into a deep, hungry kiss. It's not long till his mouth wanders down my neck, sucking and nipping at my collarbone and earning him a breathy moan in response. Soon we're shedding what's left of our clothes, and I'm climbing over him, my knees pressed on either side of his thick thighs.
Condom?
He asks. I meet his eyes. Do we need it? I'm on birth control and...
Your call. I'm good if you are.
His words are strained, barely above a whisper, and I kiss his mouth and shake my head. We don't need anything else between us. I'm wet for him already, but he dips a finger inside, testing my heat and groaning at what he finds.
So perfect.
A shaky moan pushes past my lips as he lifts me over him, positioning me just right. I plant my palms against his firm pecs, steadying myself the best that I can. But when